Welcome to another edition of Why Are You Awake? My name is Paul Farver. I'm your host. This week we have comedian Clark Jones. If you haven't already, go subscribe on my YouTube page at youtube.com/PaulFComedy. If you're listening wherever you are, go over to the YouTube. You can watch this episode. Make sure you follow Clark Jones as well. Follow me on Instagram at Paul Farver. Follow me on my website to see when I'm coming to your town, PaulFComedy.com. And also, check out our sponsors.
Hey, gang. As some of you know, I used to be a practicing lawyer in Chicago. I no longer practice, but from time to time, I need a lawyer. And when I need a lawyer, I call my friend Scott Shapiro. Scott Shapiro has been practicing law for over 25 years in Chicago. He does it all, from workers' compensation to personal injury, employment issues, and even entertainment law and contract needs. If you need a lawyer, call my friend Scott. 312-648-8800. That's 312-648-8800. Or you can email him at scott@scottshapirolegal.com. Tell him I sent you. You're welcome.
Welcome to another edition of Why Are You Awake? Paul Farver here, your host. This week we have one of the greatest comedians to come out of Chicago, comedian Clark Jones. Hey, Clark.
What's up, man? Thank you for that accurate introduction. Thank you for nailing it. I appreciate that.
We were talking about introing people before the show, where someone called out someone for not doing it properly and all that stuff. And
what was the issue?
The issue? Well, we're talking about someone tried to cancel another comedian for being rude with that TikToker. But it was funny.
Yeah.
But for me, when I used to bring you up, you used to do something. I don't know if you still do it, but like you just say my name, which is... I'll talk about that again. You said something about that recently, but you just start walking towards the host as they're talking. Do you still do that?
Sometimes if I'm compelled or if like...
So you're like standing... I remember one time we were at...
I was right next to you.
You're right next to me. I didn't even get your name out. I was
because,
like,
are you pissed at it's me? Just the crowd don't care about that stuff. I mean, unless they came for that reason.
Yeah, especially like a club with it's a showcase show.
Yeah, if they don't know me already, or if they do know me already, then they know that I've been on that shit. You know what right. I'm saying? So it's just like it's just funny to me. Like the show, I come out of a tradition where like the show or the set starts as soon as the host says your name. Like the clock starts ticking immediately. So I just think it's fun. Like some people don't like that. Some comics are very like, this has to be like this, or you know. And I respect that if they tell me, hey, like when I hosted a show in New York, it would be like some comics. I like to, if the crowd likes me as the host, I try to, make them like the person right. that I'm introducing as exactly. well. So I might say like a funny anecdote or something like that. But I found out some comics don't like that. They just want me to say what they have prepared. They're very neurotic about that. And I'm not saying that in a disparaging way. That's just what it is. And I respect whatever you need me to do.
You said something profound on social media once, and I quoted it multiple times. I think I tagged you too. But you said when you're hosting a show and they say, mm-hmm. just say whatever, you know they're about to fucking lit like shit.
They got some shit to say.
Ever since you wrote that, I'm like, when I'm on the road and someone asks me, I just say, you can just say I'm from Chicago. I'll give them four things. I go, but honestly, it doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah.
It also takes the pressure off of them to not freak out.
To remember, like, say what, like, make it as seamless as possible. Like, if you're fumbling over something,
it's already
then,
over.
Yeah, then the crowd is like, this is already off to a bad, whatever is seamless works. You can say college and clubs. I don't care. But every time I've hosted and somebody's just like, man, I don't care. They coming in with something to get out. Even if the jokes aren't the 10 out of 10, typically they are, but even if they aren't, they have something read that they don't care.
Right.
It's so funny because non-comics thought I was joking, like I was saying the opposite, like making fun of it. Because they think that like, the best comics have, they've been nuts and they did this and they did this. But the comics knew what I was saying was like, if they just so locked in like that, it doesn't even matter. It's right. about to be, they're about to say something.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. I think that, I think it's funny because if you think about it, even if you are like Chris Rock, they don't need an introduction, right? And if you're someone who's absolutely not big, but you're funny, it's your words are going to speak for itself.
Yeah. They, I mean, let that be the selling point. Yeah. You know what I mean?
The flip side to that is like sometimes when you're on a show and the comedians aren't doing well on a showcase, especially, you kind of want to be like, okay, I do have credit, so don't give up on this show yet. You know what I'm talking about?
Where sure. Like, or if they have something to say, if they're doing a book.
Promoting something.
Or promoting something like the podcast, something like that. But yeah, that could backfire too. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you, because as a host, if you crush, I'm going to bring up again the thing that you're selling, like the podcast. Make sure you check them out on this.
Yeah.
Or make sure they do that because you deserve that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, as selfless as a job hosting is, it's a big onus because I hate to just be a dead crowd. I hate to bring a comic up to a dead crowd, and I hate having to overwork, especially if the temperature's already set in the beginning.
Yeah.
They was killing, somebody bombed. It's, oh, man, I'm not good at that. Because I'm just like, yeah, it does fucking suck now.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to pretend like it doesn't, like somebody didn't just kill the whole vibe.
But you're a good host. I've seen you host before. I saw you host at the Knitting Factory. How come you don't host anymore? I don't see you ever hosting.
I don't get booked to host.
Really?
I don't get booked to host. I'm also, the groove I'm in right now is a lot more. I just want to do 50 minutes every time I go on stage.
50?
Every time I want to, I just want to do, I have so much that I'm trying to work out in my head. Now, I ain't saying I'm a crush for 50 minutes. I'm just saying that it's just certain things that I just can't expand on, that I really want to expand on. I don't mind hosting at all. It's just a muscle I got to get back into, or people got to ask me to do it.
Yeah.
In Chicago, hosting isn't for the top of the food chain necessarily.
It should be.
LA it is. New York can go whatever, but LA is like, oh, the best comedian on the show should be hosting. I don't really feel like, and when I say Chicago, I mean Laugh Factory especially, because that's where most of the comedy is right now, if we talk about the whole city. It's just you're probably going last, or if I have to be somewhere, I might go earlier, but nobody's really asking me to host the show.
Yeah, I used to be asked a lot, and I was, I think it's, if you're a good host, it's a blessing and a curse, right? Because then everyone, every time they need a host, they're like, hey, can you do it? And if you want to work on new shit, it's like, I don't want to host because you can't do it as a host. But if they have a bad host, at the Laugh Factory especially, I'll just volunteer. I'll be like, you know what? I'll just do it because it's going to fuck up the whole show if someone doesn't know what they're doing.
Sure. Yeah, I've seen that. It's just like, you used that phrase, self-aware, right before the show.
Oh, yeah. We were talking about being self-aware, yeah.
And I'm just like, I understand. Look, if the club books you to host, it ain't on you because you're just trying to work. The club has to say, okay, this person should be hosting or they should.
Yeah.
Now, whatever else is going on, I can't really worry about. I'm not a club owner. I just want to do my spots, do the best that I can. Excuse me. Do the best that I can. Get some fans, make the vibe good. But
I think it's different when you're at a club where it's not a showcase style like Laugh Factory, where you know you do have to be a pretty good comedian to host that, because you got to go up and down. You got to, if someone has a great set, you got to bring the room down a little bit. If someone has a bad set, you got to fix the room.
Sure. Yeah.
But if you're just hosting in like fucking bumblefuck Egypt, it doesn't, like, you'll go to those towns.
This man
like,
went to Egypt.
Tulsa.
Across
thing.
The water.
Oklahoma,
okay, yeah, you're
Arkansas.
Right. You're right. You're
you go
right.
to those cities, and they're giving people 6 minutes to host a show before the show's already, people are already there. They already know the host. And actually, some clubs I've done where they usually have a host feature, a headliner. And if a headliner brings me on the road and they go, we just wanted a two-man show, the clubs think that the host is, they're used to the first comic being bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're also a headliner, like doing a double show, they're like, oh, he's actually funny. Like 5 minutes in, they're like, oh, this isn't like we normally come here to fucking Chuckle Hut.
That's
you know what I mean?
That's absolutely true. On the road, it's assumed that the first voice is terrible. Is the worst comedian, or
right?
You know, the least talented.
They're doing 6 minutes.
They really, depending on where you at, it might be anybody before the headliner. It's just like, oh, we have to just, you know, do courtesy laughs, courtesy claps, or whatever. So, it's an opportunity if you're decent to be like, oh shit, because expectations are so low. Like, post feature or feature spot is such a sweet spot.
Feature spot's the best spot.
It's just so sweet to be, especially of a big comedian. Like, I just host featured for Hannibal at the Long Beach, at the Improv, and I forget where, but outside of LA. And, I thought I was going to do 10 minutes.
Right.
That's my whole mindset going in. Like, you know, he's going to do a long show, but I get there and they're like, you know, 25, and it just felt good to have that marker in my career of like, oh, okay, I'll just do, when I show up, oh, I'll do 25.
Yeah.
In front of a crowd that's ready to laugh or like ready to hear jokes.
Well, you did a 2-man show?
Yeah, I host featured.
Right.
And there's a difference between a crowd that's ready to laugh and a crowd that's ready to hear some jokes.
What do you mean?
His crowd is ready to hear some jokes. They're not just happy to be out at a comedy show because they've never been before.
They paid money
to see him, one who does write jokes. So they're ready to laugh at something constructed. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
As opposed to just like, oh, we're just happy.
We're just going
to
laugh.
We're a damn...
Just be silly.
Bridal shower, whatever.
Right.
No, the crowd, they're listening.
Yeah.
They're listening. If you have some jokes, they're going to give it up for you.
And I think, and I've done host feature a ton on the road with those big rooms, and you have about 4 to 5 minutes to prove that you can do what they came to see, or else you lose them.
Yeah, they're like dogs. They know right away if you know what the fuck you're doing. And so I hit them with something. I'm one who, before a show, I just walk around the venue. And I try to get just a feel. And because I go off feel.
Of the audience, you mean, or the room?
Of just the place.
Okay.
I just did Dallas Comedy Club, and I just walked around.
You were headlining there, though.
Yeah.
I saw
but
that.
No matter what, if I've never been there before, I just like to walk around. It might be a bar show. If I've never been there, I like to just walk around and observe and pick up anything. And I don't want to necessarily comment on it, but I'll just pick up that energy of the place that I'm at.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I always, if someone has bad sets at a club, I'll just be like, you know what you got to do is stay in. And I just do this too, especially at Laugh Factory. That's my home club. I would watch people coming in and try to read their sensibilities. Be like, all right, there's a bunch of these people like my joke. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Especially when you're newer. Now it doesn't matter because I think you're seasoned enough at a certain point where you're like, all right, they didn't like. Like, I have tester jokes up top when I'm headlining.
Sure.
To be like, all right, they don't want dark. They don't want. They're not smart. There's a certain joke I do to see how smart the crowd is.
I think I go new, in the second quarter, but it really depends. Okay, so I just did a fundraiser for Palestine, and no offense.
That's a heated conversation we were having yesterday.
Okay, it's for Palestine victims.
Fair.
So, like, I don't know who could be mad at that. It wasn't for Hamas. It was just for people who've been hurt
Fair.
By both sides.
Fair.
The clear victim in this whole thing. And, you know, I didn't know because that could have been... I didn't know if they wanted to laugh. I didn't know if they wanted me to do a TED talk. I didn't know if they wanted what they expected of me. Did they expect me to not be smart? Because sometimes people come in with their own ideas of what someone is when they see them. So if their only reference is Def Comedy Jam, then they don't expect me to know. And it's so
it was
true.
A black room.
It was mixed.
Black fundraiser.
It was a Palestinian fundraiser. I'm not sure. It was, but you know, there's a lot of Jewish people who are fighting against anti-Zionism, especially in Chicago.
It's a complicated situation.
If people can't see, Paul has his hands up because he's so nervous about something going the wrong way.
No offense. Yesterday, talking about this, and people assume they, I have strong opinions on it, but I look at things from a legal standpoint as a person who's also Middle Eastern and has Jewish blood. So it's like, all right,
yeah,
stay aside. But
I take the cerebral approach. I ask them questions, and then I kind of go off that. If I don't know because I don't know what the vibe is going to be.
What do you guys want?
It was mixed race. How do y'all feel? Yeah. My biggest thing is, listen, I've done the marches. Black Lives Matter, Me Too, slut shaming. Like, I was on, I frontline these wars. I am old enough now to just give money. Like, I don't belong.
You're not a foot soldier anymore.
I don't belong in that space anymore because I have too many questions.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
I'll give the money. You decide where it's supposed to go because I don't have the same vigor to just march. Like, that's for you. The Quran says, elders are for counsel. And checks.
You're an elder now?
I'm an elder when it comes to that. I was in New York during when Me Too first broke. You know how many marches I've been had to go to? Not that I didn't support it on my own, but it was like I was trying to have some sex too, So like I've been there. I've made the poster boards. I still have the same feeling.
I understand what you're saying, and I agree with everything you say. The only part I disagree with you on is you're calling yourself an elder, which we are significantly younger than me. So I'm like, well, fuck, what the hell do I? I'm
like a super elder. It's the space for eldership is vaster than the space for youth. It's a defined space. So to be, like, okay. Police are still killing unarmed black people.
Allegedly.
Attorney.
Listen, I don't want to.
Listen. So I'm just saying, let's just pat the bread. Let's just pump the brakes a little bit. Let's just say allegedly.
We all agree that all lives. No, I'm just
so kidding. All the marching that I've done, I don't regret it. But I don't know if the problem was ever quite solved. And so if as a young person, you're 22, 23, you have the right to go through your progressions to
figure it out.
Like in football, just you look left, whatever. You have the time to do that. Then when you get a little bit older, you'll have more questions and you say, you just want to know who's being hurt the most and let me give money to that.
Figure that out. Yeah, the empathy comes in. I get it. So, but at a show where you're doing a fundraiser for those types of situations, it's a little hard sometimes because you're like,
sure.
How, and I think Gilbert Gottfried had a joke about that where it's like he came in just being completely inappropriate. But sometimes you go to those fundraisers and like people are giving a deep speech about something you got. And then now here's the fucking clown. And then you're like, what the fuck?
I spread myself so fucking thin trying to give people what they need and what they want. So I gave a little bit of cerebral stuff. I was silly. I did music. I did musical jokes. I do a lot of music jokes. And I just tried to give everybody something. I did some data stuff. My first 10 minutes was about the conflict, about the genocide. No offense. And I gave people that. Okay, I gave you that. Now let me just do me. Yeah. For the next 50 minutes.
And it probably worked.
It was a fun show.
Yeah.
It turned out fun. People do want to laugh. They do want the crowd work. I think crowds are like trained to be expecting crowd work now.
Yeah, because of us. Because of our social media.
Because of our greed and our need for adoration. They're coming in like, oh, okay. Let me.
And comedians get mad when that happens at a show. I'm like, this is your fault, dude. Look at the clips we're all putting up.
This is just what it is.
They expect it at every show now.
This, look at Nimesh Patel. He's doing quite well for himself.
Nimesh is fucking, he's doing
every time a comic I know does the Chicago theater, I'm just like, fuck my life. Like, what did I do? Like, it's just so disrespectful to come Nimesh into my awesome. Home city. No, I've known him since 2013.
Yeah.
I know his work ethic. I know his work ethic. So that's what it's like I'm laughing with him, but he's not there. I'm just like, come on, bro.
He's in on it. He
knows.
We were together back in 2015 at the Improv in Schaumburg, and he was opening and I was opening for Gad Elmaleh, the French comedian. We stayed in touch. And then he was in town when I was doing his shows in Scottsdale. And he was doing another room. I'm like, hey, can I come to a spot? He's like, actually, you're going to do more time. He didn't like his. I was drunk, which I never am before a show. I go, I just want to do 10. He's like, just keep going, whatever. I saw him when he started. He's like, look, guys, I know you guys came here because you think I'm going to do. He goes, I'll do the crowd work, but just wait. I've got something to say before.
Yeah.
And that's how he addressed it. And then no one fucking interrupted him until the end.
There's a way to, and it's an awesome skill set to be able to lay the
control,
room out,
right.
Control the room from the beginning. What do you say in the beginning, and all of that? But that's what I mean. Like before you even say a word, or before you even get into your set, the crowd can tell what's going on, and it's not. I don't want anybody to misconstrue it. This is nothing, no type of shade or anything like that. It's just that when your friends are more successful than they anticipated themselves to be.
Gotcha.
It's just like, all right, good job.
It's
great,
happening.
Wonderful, but we know what the fuck going on.
Well,
keep killing.
He's got, you said it, he's got a great work ethic. And
great work ethic.
He deserves everything he's getting right now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But going back to, you're doing shows on the road. You were in Dallas. Like in that situation, you're doing about 50 minutes, right?
Sure.
Closing it
out.
How did those shows go, by the way? I've heard great things about that room.
I did Don't Tell in Dallas.
Nice.
And I closed both shows. And it's just, you know, it's just where I am. I'm never going to go. It's funny. Like, you don't know what you can do until you do it. And like, you just remember starting out like, man, how do people do an hour? How do people do 30 minutes? How do people do 20? And to just like, to not really even have to ask how long do you want me to do? I know that I can do it.
Yeah.
It's something that I didn't even realize until saying it just now, how dope it is. And I'm kind of thankful for that.
Yeah.
To get to that point without, you know,
and not having to lie about it. Like
not having to lie.
When you're like, hey, do you have 30 clean? And you're like, uh-huh. And then you think about it.
Yeah, whatever.
Like, no, I don't.
Just write the check.
Yeah.
Now I need
it's
the
like,
money.
They look at you like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, dude, I actually have two specials. So that's an
hour.
You can go back and fucking see. I'm not going to even do that stuff. But
I got more
see.
In a tank.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, or it's even
feeling.
Like, you know, it was an hour ask. And a lot of people, when they look at time, they're like non-comics
is
or producers.
You?
I'm sorry.
You got somewhere to go. You can't fucking.
They're like non-comics or producers. You're like, oh, just do an hour. But it's like, I think I did 53. And I'm just like, I had more in the tank than jokes I could do.
Yeah,
I'm like, we both agree. This is,
the show,
we gave them what they needed.
Yeah. The shows, especially if there's like a guest spot on a show where it's a feature host, whatever, or someone goes long a little bit. It's like, you don't want the show to go over 90 minutes.
Yeah. Just for that sake. Now, if back in the day, they used to say, oh, do all your time or I'm not paying you, that type of shit. That's a whole different beast.
When did you start?
2009.
Oh, wow. Okay. Where did you start?
Been in it for a minute. I started on Town Hall Pub.
Oh, yeah.
On 3336 North.
I remember that room.
North Clark, yeah.
With Will.
Yeah, well, that's where we started. Then I started doing Jokes and Notes on the South Side, like, quickly after that. So it was just bouncing back and forth. And then I would do a Mikey O show, and it'd be all Latino crowd. And I would do wherever
so
they hit station.
So for people to know, the Town Hall Pub was in Lakeview.
Lakeview.
Hot Room. You guys started it, right?
No. Well, the first comedy show there was Entertaining Julia, Beth Stelling, and a part of our sisters.
Right.
I actually don't think that Beth and the sisters, it was started by Jenna Friedman.
Okay.
She used to do that every Sunday night. Then Will and I came along and did Two Black Dudes in an Open Mic on Tuesdays. And then, so I was hosting that, doing the open mic at Jokes and Notes on the South Side, all black crowd. and then just whatever, just the whole city, whatever was happening in the city,
and
from
and
Wrigleyville to.
For those that don't know, Town Hall Pub was probably an all white crowd, or mostly white crowd.
We started getting people out.
Yeah.
People started to come out.
I remember that room.
Yeah, like, it would be, like, one time we had an all, like, all-black crowd up at Town Hall Pub.
On the north side.
On the north side of Chicago. First, Lakeview, Boys Town, when it was still Boys Town.
East Lakeview, yeah.
Yeah, they got us in when the Red Eye was still around. We won an award. Best show to bring the whole city together. So that was like a big thing. Will and I won an award for best show to
look
bring
at you
the whole
guys
city.
Ahead of the game.
Now,
you did more for America than Barack Hussein Obama.
They don't bring that up in the intro when I come on stage. They don't say 2012 Red Eye Award.
So were you, you started that room, you were already doing comedy when you started the room though, right?
No, I started. My first time I did comedy, Will was just the host. And then by the second show, I was co-hosting.
Okay.
It was Kid Ha-Ha's Playhouse, which he's bringing back in L.A.
So it's so you had not done stand-up, you just started hosting a show?
I did a set on the show. That was my first set ever. And then about a month later, Jokes and Notes, Lil Rel was the host of the open mic.
Right.
So he's the first person to bring me up at a comedy club.
Wow.
Yeah. It's just crazy to see. He's just tear it down. So I was fucked up because, like, he would just be killing, destroy. I mean, people, like,
as
doubling over,
yeah,
as a host. So I thought that's what open mic comedy was. So then I started going to Northside open mics. I'm just like,
why is this asshole doing all this time?
Why are people only doing 3 minutes? Lorel's up there for 25, killing the whole time.
Right.
Like, why is it people not laughing at stuff? Why are people reading off a notebook on a microphone? So I was just confused. I had to learn, like, it's
difference.
Culturally different.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw Hannibal at an open mic, and I was just like, this guy's the best comedian in Chicago, but he was just trying
working
material.
Shit out. Yeah.
He was working shit. I didn't know what working material
yeah.
out meant because I was coming from motherfuckers. Blah, 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 blah. And that was a lesson that I had to learn pretty fast.
Well, I think that when I started an open mic, we started 2.5 Persians after you guys did that. Me and Chris Bader
and Bader,
another
yeah.
couple guys. And I thought we had judges at our show, so we thought I was telling people to bring their best stuff. And comedians were like, "What are you talking about? It's an open mic."
It's an open mic.
But I kind of tried to create a space where it was a little of both, right? Where people try
sure.
new shit. But if you and sometimes the judges would be like bookers at Zany's or bookers at Comedy Bar,
sure.
And then people
yeah.
would freak out.
Well, yeah, that was
celebrity judges is what we called it.
But that was the thing with us having civilians there.
Right.
This was the first
time. You guys had civilians.
We had civilians there, so it's like, this is a chance to see, not just for your buddies, because it's so packed, all the comics were outside or in the back. So this isn't make my friends laugh. This is some people's first show.
Yeah,
this is the first show. And, like, it's so funny. Like, if you're a lot of the comics from Chicago who are big or, like, right on that cusp of stardom, from the Lisa Traegers to the Megan Gailey's to Chris Redd, mm-hmm. A lot of people started in that space.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a fun time, very fun time.
So before you did comedy, now, as a comedian, was it hard for you to stay up late, or were you always just staying up late were you like a night owl in college? And
as a kid, I went to bed when MASH came on. And that's a very Chicago thing.
So many people have been saying that.
MASH was
MASH was the
I
time.
Never made it past Suicide is Painless.
That's
the
10
intro.
O'clock, I think.
That was that 10 or 10:30 maybe?
It's on WFLT. I think it was 10 o'clock
it
or
was,
10:30 maybe? Or
it was All in the Family, then MASH. And I surely never made it a whole episode. I'm a night owl now. It just keeps happening where I'm just like, all right, today I'm gonna wake up early and then I'll be to bed
doesn't
early
work.
And it does not happen.
You're just tired the whole day.
I'll get a nap in Yeah, and then it'll last like 2 hours from like 10 to 12. And then that's pretty much that. And then I have to try again tomorrow.
Well, a 2 hour nap in the afternoon, I heard, is equal to like 4 hours of regular sleep. Because your body,
mm-hmm.
it just, you recharge.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's scientifically proven.
I don't want to be controversial. We're on the north side, so I have to do the yes and improv.
No offense.
But no, none taken. I will wake up early, but yeah, around 9:10.
That's early, yeah.
9:10, I got to get that nap in. It's like Greece. You know, Greece, they take naps throughout the day. Greece has like some of the most, as poor as parts of it is, they have some of the most happiest citizens because they take a little siesta.
Oh, the country Greece. I thought you were talking about
musical?
I'm like, what do you fuck? I had no idea.
It's like the country Greece.
Europeans
yes.
in general yes. take siestas.
They take a little nap throughout the day.
Spain does it too.
Yes. Italy, maybe? I don't know. Yeah. Parts of Italy. But yeah, it's a Mediterranean thing, man. It's pretty cool. Yeah. I think it's the way to go.
They're happier people than we are. They had shootings.
I worked at a B2B agency. They had a little break room if you just need a nap.
B2B is business to business.
Business
no
to business. Little industry lingo. Yeah, I worked at a B2B agency in the art department, and you know, you just take a little nap.
So now you said after you take that nap, what's like a typical after show for you? How late are you up after? If you're on the road, whether you're home, Ooh. What are you doing? Are you creative during that pace?
I'm definitely not going straight to bed. That's the thing.
You can't.
Like 30 minutes. It's about a 30-minute drive from, say, my door-to-door, say, my house to Laugh Factory. That's why I would stick around. That's why I'm not. It's a gift and a curse. I'm not involved in any gossip because I don't hang around after.
It's the greatest feeling.
I'm not trying
to
take.
I'm too old to. I'm an elder. No one. They'll be like, did you hear about so-and-so? I'm like, I don't even know
that. I have no idea. No male comics or women comics are intimidated by me or like mad because I think people are
intimidated by you. I was intimidated by you when I started, but
I mean like they're not like I'm gonna take their whatever they're working on with a woman or something like that.
Sure.
Like I'm not in your business in any type of way. Like I encourage
we're there to work, we get the fuck out of there.
I'm going before, you know, whatever. I'm only there that long because I'm going last, right? So I go home. I'm a YouTube. I think I watch YouTube more than I watch any of the apps.
What are you watching?
Just these like faceless documentaries. And I want to start making them too.
Educational?
No, anything.
Are they conspiracy theory shit?
It's Sopranos. Okay. It's Street Wars. Some sewing stuff. If anybody listening to this episode help me. Right, or watching, can do one of those faceless documentary YouTube channels where I could just talk about...
You have a good voice for that shit.
That's all I want to do, man. And I want to start with The Sopranos because none of the experts are black that I see. So I want to be that voice.
So they're documentaries about the show Sopranos. You're not even watching the episodes.
It's just like tying everything together about this thing. So it'll be like a 15-minute... YouTube documentary on just Pauly Walnuts or every time Tony cursed somebody out. Just these like just whatever for the fans. I think it's so cool.
Is that calming for you or you're getting into it?
It is. Ooh, is it calming? It's something to go with whatever food I'm eating.
Okay.
And I'm trying my best to not eat before I go to sleep. But what's calming is, I'm about to sound so old. What's calming is the New York Times crossword. That's what I get into when I need to just.
That is fucking elderly as shit.
I know, but it just mellows me out, man. I
could never do it. I couldn't do a crossword. There's certain people that are just trained mentally for that. I was trying to help my niece with a crossword, like a 12-year-old niece.
It's
and
my
I
jam.
Fucking got, I got frustrated.
It's
I was spitting words in.
Yeah, it can be. But then, like, it's like with anything. Once you get that hook of what they're doing, it like, because I know what they're doing. So that's why it calms me down. And I'm not frustrated when I don't get something. So it's just like, oh, you know, Another one of the little tricks. I didn't get
it
this time.
Are you finishing these crosswords?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah. I've finished the Sunday a bunch of times.
Is that the easier one?
The hardest one is like Friday, Saturday. Sunday is the biggest one. Sunday is the biggest of the crosswords.
Are you doing it on a computer? Or are you
on my phone?
Oh, okay.
On my phone.
If you had the actual paper, I'd be like, man.
Friends got me books. So I had like 2 New York Times crossword books because they know that was a great Christmas gift for me. They don't actually do it. But I only take that on the road, like on a plane or something.
So that's what you're... Okay, so after shows, if you need to calm down, you do a crossword?
Well, that's when I need to, like, all right, time to kind of go... I've watched my docs. I've then eaten my food. I need to just lay in bed, and I'll have something playing on the background, and I'll just be in bed doing the New York Times.
Are you creative in that time space after a show where you're like, I'm going to go home and fix that joke or listen to your sets or anything like that, or are you just done?
No, I have a designated day. Like during the daytime is when I listen to sets.
Okay.
Or like rework things. I mean, it sounds, I don't know how it sounds, but like I'm most creative in the shower before. I take really long showers and I'm just thinking about like, what energy do I have and what energy do I need to bring
for the show?
For the show. To be prepared for anything in that type of way. Like, how much am I going to let the audience dictate? And how much am I going to give and set the tone?
So that's why you say that, because I told people that don't listen to their sets enough to play it while you're in the shower because you can't turn it off. You're stuck.
Yeah.
And that's where I am the most creative. I write shit down. I want to get one of those things where you can write in the shower.
Oh, like that's, upside down pen, like Seinfeld?
No, it's like there's like a thing that's like a water. It's like a waterproof thing. I don't know. I've never done it, but. I feel like that's like too much, but
yeah, no, I'll just, as soon as I get out, I just do the, either put it in the notes or I make a recording of my voice.
That's a good idea too. Are there things that you think that you miss out on because you aren't awake early and staying up early as a person that stays up late? Do you feel like you miss out on anything?
No. And I think what helped me is, and this is why living in New York kind of drove me crazy, because we were first. And I hated to be like, oh, I got to have the first take. I loved L.A. because nobody expected me to have the first take because we're 3 hours behind. You know what I mean?
So, you mean the first take on something that happened?
Something that first thing in the morning, you got to write the first joke about it or first thing. Like, and that's kind of changing now because people are doing videos and stuff like that. But like, I'd rather write the best thing than just have the first thing.
You know what I mean? Just wait.
Because then somebody would just take it and do the best version of it.
Yeah, same topic.
Just like, oh, that's where one direction we can go.
It or sealing it. Yeah.
Yeah. You want like to remixing it and then doing it better when they do their video version in front of a static photo.
Have you had shit taken from you?
My jokes have been in cities I've never been to.
Yeah. Or they've stayed when you've left.
They've been on tour, like just like crazy, all types of cities.
I'll get calls like, hey, this guy's doing your joke. I'm like, is it working? Like, yeah. I'm like,
yeah.
I'm not going to Arkansas.
It is just, we think the audience cares more than they do. They just want to be entertained that night. It's unfortunate, but it is what it is. I've only confronted one comic here because they were doing they used a phrase that I know I created. Right.
Okay.
And I got a text from a comedian who was at Subterranean and saw it. They were like, oh man, you up at Subterranean? I'm like, no. They're like, your joke is. Calvin Evans. He texted me and told me, and I was like, I think I was like,
Calvin Evans texted you.
He's the one who texted me. No. He didn't. He don't need to take none of my shit. Calvin is brilliant. But he texted me and I forgot where I was, but I made a beeline straight to there to, hey, let's talk outside. And we had a conversation and, you know,
did he acknowledge that
he was just like, you don't want to acknowledge. He did. He said he was sorry, but he was like, oh man, my bad. Like, you know, tried to brush it off. I wasn't looking to try to put hands on him or anything like that, but I was very intent because when I first started on the South Side, there was like so many topics. You don't know what topics are. And I got accused of taking stuff by comedians I never even heard of.
Right.
Very broad stuff. Like just weed, like weed, alcohol, just
the basic stuff.
The
you
basic stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
People, they were like, "Oh, you took that from." I'm like, "How can I take some if I never?" I'm 2 months in,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
and I got like surrounded by like 4 or 5 comedians who were intimidated because I wasn't like them.
Yeah,
they knew I had something else to say. So the first thing people try to do is, "Are you still a joke?" Okay, so I had to start writing. And so when I come up with something that's like totally out of my head because I'm so insecure that I wouldn't be doing somebody else's shit, and you think you could just take it in Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't let that ride.
Of course. That's like the biggest, probably worst crime you could do as a comedian is take someone's shit.
Yeah, especially when it's so especially personal. So even though I hated it at the time, it just made me go, I got to tell jokes that only I can tell.
I agree with you so much. When people are like, are you afraid of that shit? I'm like, how many like Persian lawyers turn comedian? What are they going to talk about?
There's certain things
there's
that
only
can't be taken.
That are you, yeah.
I mean, we have overlapping circles. We both talk about the dollar store, right? We both have a
dollar
similar
tree,
joke in
yeah,
that,
yeah, yeah.
You know. So
yeah, you did have a joke about dollar store.
I still do it. I'll do it. I want to make it even more. It's okay if you listen, two comics.
That's the same topic.
Look, same topic or even the first part of it. But like comics as listening, like keep writing the joke. Get to the point that
you're
it's
touching
personal.
You're only on the surface.
You're only surface
topic.
Level. Pick the bone clean. That's what
I had a joke that another comedian was doing the same topic on. And I was like, people are like, oh, you took that. I'm like, my joke has nothing to do with. We're both talking about whatever, a holiday. And I'm talking about it from what happened to me on that day and my experience about it. And then They're talking about it. I mean, the premise is the same that we're talking about this holiday and how it affects us. But it's like people can't talk about Christmas. Like everyone's going to talk about Christmas or whatever.
It's a real thing. It's also like for Chicago comedians, and they learn this when you go to LA and New York, whatever your A is, about 20 other comedians are already doing it. Whatever your A material is.
A material, yeah, yeah.
You go to New York.
You learn fast.
You see right away that you just, I ain't going to say you have nothing. I'm not going to say that.
Well, you know, you've been in LA. The first time I went to LA, I was like, I'm ready. I do Laugh Factory. And I used to do a lot of stuff about being Persian. Chicago, no one's talking about that shit because mm-hmm. This is before there were other Persian comedians. Mm-hmm. In LA, half the crowd is Persian and they're like, this is like fucking.
Yeah.
They're like, shit, that's like I was bombing my dick off. I'm like, how is this not working? They're
Persian, a lot of Armenians.
It's all immigrant stuff. They're like, dude, you are not even close to the level. And I remember it was a Persian comedian going there after me. I'm like, hey, dude, just be aware that the crowd is going to be half Persian. So some of the shit you say that's self-deprecating about Persians, they are going to fucking turn on you.
They give you nothing.
And I told him that. And he's like, thank you so much for telling me. I was like,
It's a big world out there. It's a big world. Hey, listen, go keep killing. Keep getting paid wherever you can. But, you know, it can get awkward if you have to go after somebody who's polished and they're covering stuff already. You only get 10 minutes.
Especially on those.
Yeah, you going in the road. You're doing whatever. Like, just keep writing and keep making it personal.
Hell yeah. Good advice from an elder.
From an old ass man, from Pop Pop.
We are out of time, man. We didn't even get to scratch the surface on this shit, but people have, you know how it is with social media. They don't have, we can't do an hour.
I have your attention span. Club Shay Shay.
This is the Persian version.
Persian version.
The dollar store version, if
this
you will.
This is the Dollar Tree version of Club Shay Shay.
Where can people find out about your upcoming shows and follow you and all that shit?
I'm Clark LaRue Jones on everything. CLARKLAREW Jones.
Are there other Clark Jones comedians?
There are no other Clark Jones comedians. I am the Clark Jones. There's a dentist, and I'm glad that my name pops up first now. That was my first comedy goal, to show up first when people put in Clark Jones, and now.
And it is? Hell yeah. Well done.
Yep.
Well, thanks, Clark, for doing the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. This has been great.
Thank you all for watching or listening to another episode of Why Are You Awake? Go to sleep.